On the Line, live on ESPN 106.7. Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goetz and Carter Bird.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika, sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're all doing well on this another gloomy day here in the Auburn Opelika area. No rain, just a little clouds and not a whole lot of sun, but hope you're all doing well on this Tuesday, January 31st, the final day of January. It seems like yesterday we were sitting here talking about the turn of the year, and we're already through the month of January. We have tomorrow, which is February 1st, which is technically signing day. Not really signing day anymore, as Jacob Hillman talked to us yesterday, as nobody really recognizes it as that anymore. But
no, it's not a real signing day anymore. Auburn is going to have one player publicly sign with Auburn that we know of.
And it's a guy that we've known is going to be he's going to be signing with Auburn. We've known that for a while. But again, January 31st, 2023. Hope you're all doing well. Got a great show on tap for you today. We'll talk some college basketball. We'll also talk about the new Big 12 football schedule being released. And you may be thinking, Big 12, why would we talk about that? It's a new-looking Big 12 football schedule, as it'll be some new teams coming in to the Big 12. So we'll get to look at that, kind of break it down a little bit. Carter has a take about his Kansas State Wildcats in 2023 that I just don't agree with. So we'll talk about that coming up in a little bit as well. Hoping to get Trey Wallace, who covers the SEC for OutKick, hoping to get him on the phone in hour number two. We'll also look around college basketball, see what's going on in some games tonight, talk a little Auburn football, kind of a little bit of everything today. So should be a fantastic show. Phone lines are open. We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390. And Carter, before we get into everything, we've already mentioned it before, but the conversation about who gets to claim Jalen Hurts in the Super Bowl continues to roll on Twitter, and I think it is absolutely hilarious. I think it's so funny because Alabama fans get upset. Yeah. They get so upset about it, and I just laugh. I think it's funny.
Well, it's because everybody just baits them into the conversation, baits them into getting mad, and they get upset.
Yes.
And they get really defensive. And I mean, in reality, the entire thing is stupid.
It is. But it's still really funny.
Really, really dumb. I mean, if somebody has significant accomplishments across multiple years at a school and they go to a new school where they play even better, they reach new heights, and they end up, it allows them to go play professionally, that athlete should be allowed to claim both. I think it's really dumb otherwise.
The athlete may claim both, but which fan base has the right to claim him?
Both do. I mean, Jalen Hurts won a national championship at Alabama. Tua came in for the second half. Okay, well, Jalen Hurts took them to the game. And the next year, Jalen Hurts did the same thing in the SEC championship game to win them the SEC championship against Georgia. I mean, this makes sense. This is what happens. Like, both fan bases have the right to claim the athlete here. And I think that there's an example of this in the last Summer Olympics. I got an argument with a friend of mine that was she was a swimmer at Penn, and I went to school with her at Northwestern, and she's friends with one of the, I'm trying to find his name, a former Auburn swimmer that ended up transferring to Indiana.
Okay.
Which is where he finished up. But he spent like 3-4 years at Auburn before that. Was all SEC, and I think it was Zach Apple. And she was saying that it was just unacceptable for Auburn to claim him. And my argument was he absolutely should be claimed by both schools because he was an all SEC swimmer at Auburn across multiple years. And then he was an All-American at Auburn, actually. And then he goes to Indiana and does really well. And then in the Tokyo Olympics, he wins 2 gold medals.
Yeah. Well, look, I bring it up because I just think it's funny. And I saw something else about it today. The conversation of who gets to claim Jalen Hurts in the Super Bowl, Oklahoma or Alabama. I think it's just really, really funny. And also, speaking of Alabama, I'm sure you saw this. The Washington offensive coordinator interviewed with Nick Saban for the offensive coordinator job turned it down. The second coordinator to turn Nick Saban down this offseason.
Well, this is going to be a really interesting period in time because I think you're seeing some people that may see Nick Saban as approaching the end of the road of his coaching career. And I think you might be seeing some coaches that are aware of how difficult it is to coach under him.
Yeah. Well, there's no doubt it's difficult.
Might be passing on coaching with him.
But here's what blows my mind is think about in the last 10 years, if you have gone to be a coordinator at Alabama, what's the next step for you? You become a head coach. You become a coach somewhere. When you coach under Nick Saban, you more likely than not, 8 times out of 10, even 9 times out of 10, that coach eventually becomes a head coach either at the college level or a high-level coach in the NFL. It happens almost every time, and yet here we are. We've seen 2 coordinators already turn down Nick Saban for a coordinating position.
So I think that there was a long period in time where that was true. But when you look at the past few years, I mean, Pete Golding, I mean, you had Sark, yes. And Sark had already been a head coach, had varying levels of success. And he was the addition to the Nick Saban School for Wayward Boys of coaches that are trying to rehab their images, like Lane Kiffin, like Sark. Like Butch Jones did it too.
Yep.
So many coaches have gone through that. But you look at defensive coordinator, and Pete Golding was at Alabama for a while and is now the DC at Ole Miss. I'll tell you what, I'm hesitant to say that that's a great career move for him.
Which is, we were confused, and a lot of people were, when you left Alabama to take the job at Ole Miss at the same position. Now, obviously, tensions were not great at Alabama between Nick Saban and him and the fans and him, right? But to go from Alabama's defensive coordinator to Ole Miss's defensive coordinator, you're taking a step down. Like, there's just no doubt about it. So I bring it up because it's really an interesting conversation to look at this because more times than not in the history of Nick Saban at Alabama, when you get a chance to work for him, you go because of what it has led to down the road. But now you start seeing guys say, you know what? I'm actually going to pass, Nick. I don't think I want to go work for you in Tuscaloosa.
Something to keep an eye on as well. I don't know how much longer Nick Saban's going to be the guy. If I'm Alabama, if I feel that Nick is a year or two away from the end, there is one name right now that I look at and I think, this is my coach potentially for 25 years.
I think there's a couple of names here.
Where are you going to go? Because I think going to go with a name.
You brought it up, brother. I'll let you start.
I'm going to go with a name that it's probably not even on your radar.
Well, you brought it up. Go ahead.
You're probably going to think, what, Dan Lanning?
That was one of them. That wasn't my go-to.
Who's your go-to? I'm curious because it's not the one I'm going to mention, but the one that I'm going to mention terrifies me. I want to get to that in a second.
Well, here's the thing. I'll be honest. I guess I don't have an actual go-to. I have a couple of names in mind, like Dan Lanning is one of them.
Okay.
I think he is up there.
Who else?
Man, I had it.
Yeah, it's not Cristobal right now.
It was
Cristobal a few years back.
It's not Cristobal now.
It's not Dabo anymore.
It's definitely not Dabo. I think that's been a very popular one, and that is Dabo is out of the equation. I think if he didn't go there 3 years ago, which obviously Saban had no reason to not be there.
It's not Lane Kiffin.
It's not happening.
Lane Kiffin. At this point, with the immaturity that he just displayed over the last 3 months, that's hilarious if Alabama were to hire him as a head coach. That is asking that entire thing to collapse on itself.
Well, I still am under the impression that whoever the next coach after Saban is will not be there for more than 3 years because they will fail. They will be gone. And then the next guy will step in.
One guy I am pretty sure would absolutely just smoke it at Alabama for a long time.
Who?
D'Amico Ryans.
Really?
The defensive coordinator for the San Francisco 49ers.
Interesting.
Unbelievable defensive mind. Played at Alabama. Former SEC Defensive Player of the Year.
Interesting.
Second-round draft pick. What, first-team All-Pro in 07? Defensive Rookie of the Year in the NFL, and is now one of the best defensive minds in football. He needs to get a head coaching job ASAP in the NFL, because if he's not the head coach, if he's not an NFL head coach, and Nick Saban steps away from that role at Alabama, he is 38 years old, and I think he would step in and absolutely kill it, and I think he could be the guy there for 25 years.
But here's the problem, is think about where college football is. It's not a defensive game anymore. Sure, you have to have defense. The SEC is not a defensive game. It's offense. That's where the game has gone. Not saying a defensive-minded coach can't survive.
Counterpoint. Over the last decade, what two coaches have dominated the SEC?
Saban.
And Kirby Smart.
And Kirby.
Both defensive head coaches.
Fair.
Now, I don't think necessarily being the defensive head coach, I don't think that matters. I think this is somebody who is in the Saban system, knows what it's like to run that CEO level that Saban and Kirby run, because he was in the program with both of them, really, I believe. I don't know when did Kirby start at Alabama?
Ooh, I don't know the year. You'd have to look it up.
I'm pulling it up right now.
So
he was, because holy cow, I did not realize that Kirby was the DC at Alabama for 8 years. For 8 years. But so he was in the building with both of these guys. And you better believe Nick Saban would give him the guidance to run it the way that he was running it. And he would continue everything Alabama's been doing. I firmly believe it. It might have a new energy to it because it's a young head coach. And to me, that is the name that terrifies me if you think about and the next Alabama head coach.
Here's one thing, another pushback maybe. And I'm not saying it's a bad choice. I'm just kind of, playing a little devil's advocate here a little bit. Obviously, right now he's in the running or in conversations to take the Houston Texans job. That's sort of been in the works a little bit. He's interviewed with them.
J.J. Watt's campaigning for him on Twitter.
Yeah. What if he takes that job and kills it at the Texans? He's not going to leave go to Alabama,
that's
right?
That's what I'm saying, is if he gets an NFL head coaching job, then I think Alabama is off the table, unless that just goes horribly wrong, which, let's be real, at the Texans, it very well could.
Yes, but
Lovie Smith 1 year, which was ridiculous.
How are you supposed to win right now at the Texans? Let's be honest. How are you supposed to win down there?
They've had 2 1-year coaches in a row, right?
Yeah.
I believe.
I think you're right.
I mean, that's unacceptable.
You can't expect to win, honest. Yeah.
But you cannot have back-to-back 1 year coaches in the NFL. That's just ridiculous and not fair, and kind of taints what everybody thinks about your organization.
Fair. Here is my actual counterpoint, though. I wanted to get in the part about him possibly being an NFL head coach coming up, but this is an NFL guy, right? He's an NFL coach, possibly becoming an NFL head coach. Let's say that goes south and Alabama considers D'Amico Ryans for the next head coaching job when Nick Saban is no longer there. We know the difference between being an NFL coach and being a college coach. That's a huge question mark. Recruiting, right? Relationships. All of those things that it takes to be stepping in the living room, talking to the kid, talking to the parents, going to the high schools. Something we saw Brian Harsin struggle with. Not that he was an NFL guy, but you know what I'm saying. All of those back-end things that it takes to be a college coach, and add on the part of being and dealing with NIL, dealing with transfer portal, all of those things that an NFL coach does not have to deal with, how good would D'Amico Ryans be? I don't know. It's just a hypothetical, but fair. I think that would be a concern.
So I was mistaken. I was looking at the wrong dates. He was not there under Saban, but
okay.
I wonder if if I am the people in power at Alabama, I am helping facilitate a relationship between D'Amico Ryans and Nick Saban and trying to set up a friendship, a dialogue there where Nick Saban is in that kind of Coach K kind of role that's happening this year where like he's around the program.
Yeah.
He's like the over
the Coach K thing was like, weird to me.
Yeah. I mean, that's a little bit different, but I'm saying like almost okay.
Like a Roy Williams.
To better success. What's going on with the Bucks and Bruce Arians where
got you.
Saban's around the program. He helps guide the next guy. Somebody who is an Alabama guy.
Mm-hmm.
But D'Amico Ryans absolutely terrifies me because I think, yeah, I mean, it could not work out. But I think that he's a guy that is a great enough defensive mind, is respected enough in football circles that he could build a staff and he could continue what Nick Saban has built. And part of me wonders, I bet you Nick Saban goes out of his way to try and make sure the next guy after him is successful.
Oh, I would say so.
Because I think that that would lend a lot of credit to what he built, that it was able to sustain itself after he walked out of the building.
Which is totally fair. And I think he will do everything he can to make sure that happens. But the expectations are going to be ungodly high. They're unrealistically high. And I just don't know. I don't care how good you are. I don't think you. There's very, very few, if any, to take over directly after Saban and be successful at Alabama. If you can, great. It's happening sort of at Ohio State, right? Not obviously, Urban Meyer was not to that level at Ohio State, but he was pretty darn good up there in Columbus. And he was done, and Ryan Day stepped in. And I said, there's no way Ryan Day survives long term. I don't think he can recruit and do what Urban Meyer did. He has sort of done it. He hasn't won at the level that Urban Meyer did. He's lost to Michigan two times in a row, and I think the seat in Columbus right now is starting to get hot. I say that because the expectations at Alabama are going to be even higher. Coming off of the greatest coach to ever coach college football, one of the greatest coaches to ever coach the game of football, will then step down. Whoever steps into that role will be expected to continue to get the number one recruiting class, go to national championships, win national championships. I don't think anybody can do that immediately. Doesn't mean it can't be done. I just don't think it will. I think it'll be not the next coach, but the next coach will be the successful one at Alabama. But I'm with you that Saban will try his best to make sure that does not happen.
Yeah, and depending on how much Kirby Smart dominates the immediate future.
Or
there could be a Larry Coker effect where whoever immediately follows Nick Saban wins a championship or two, and then it devolves from there.
It could, because of the talent that Saban had already brought in.
It's about like the people in the building,
mm-hmm.
the players in the building, the culture stays for a little bit, which I think Alabama's got some work to do to get that back right now.
Yeah.
But then it starts to fracture, and that's what happened at Miami, and that's where you saw Larry Coker drastically fall off in his tenure as the head coach at Miami.
Well, I think the timing is really interesting and how it relates to Auburn. We'll talk about that when we come back. We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Back inside the studio here at ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika, sports leader for the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Carter, we started with an interesting conversation because I brought up the fact that the Washington offensive coordinator interviewed with Nick Saban in Alabama for their offensive coordinator position and turned them down, and it brought up an interesting discussion about what happens when Saban is no longer at Alabama. And I want to relate this to Auburn because I don't think our listeners want to sit here and listen to us talk about Alabama all day, because it does relate to Auburn, right? I mentioned before we went to break that the timing of all of this is very, very interesting because, look, Saban's not going to be at Alabama forever. I don't think he's there within the next 5 years. I really don't.
I don't think he's there within the next three.
I think I'm kind of with you on that.
I think we might be in the last 24 months of Nick Saban at Alabama.
And it very well could be. Or he could come out and prove everybody wrong and win another national championship and tell everybody to, I don't know, right? But here's the thing. Here's the thing. With Alabama and Nick Saban and what is going on right now, the timing is really, really interesting because people are starting to have these sorts of conversations about the downfall, quote-unquote, downfall of Alabama, Nick Saban, whatever, and what happens next. Well, just on the other side of the state, in our nice little town of Auburn, Alabama, things are starting to really grow. Things are starting to build. Momentum is starting to build up over in the athletics complex inside the new football facility. I think that timing is really, really interesting. If Hugh Freeze can continue to do what he's doing right now, recruiting, if he can make it happen on the field, if he can do the things that we think he can do, you could possibly see a shift in the state if things go the way they're supposed to, or we see that they're going right now. Now, obviously, Georgia would love to have a say in that in the SEC as a whole, but here in the state of Alabama, I would say the next 4 years, Carter, are huge for what it means in this state, Alabama versus Auburn, yep. What the state of the programs are, and maybe the dominance of a rivalry could be switching as we know it.
Yeah, I think that there is a window. There is a window for Auburn to make a significant run and climb back into the very top of the SEC. It involves capitalizing on this, I think, period of a little bit of instability at Alabama, where you have a down year this year, and then next year, or this upcoming year, you've got no Bryce Young anymore. You've got no Will Anderson anymore. Both coordinators are gone. Who's the quarterback? Jahmyr Gibbs is gone. A lot of significant pieces in that program are gone. And I'm very curious to see what this looks like going forward.
Let's get to the phone lines. We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. Dan from Auburn, you're on the line. Welcome in.
Hey, guys. Yeah, I agree with you on the thing with Nick Saban. I think he's sticking around hoping he can get that last national championship to make him have the most of all time. Mm-hmm. He's tied right now, I believe. But if you look at his path now to get that championship, is way more difficult than it used to be.
No doubt.
And right now, you know, you got LSU's getting better. You got teams that beat him this year. I mean, you got Texas A&M's got talent coming in. You know, yeah, obviously we have, you know, some thoughts what may happen with the offensive coordinator, but who knows? But I mean, they look like a program on the rise. You got Auburn, looks like they're on the way back, and then you got even Ole Miss. It's hard enough just to get through the SEC West, but then you're stuck playing Kirby, who right now you should. I mean, I would say Georgia's the top program right now.
Oh yeah, there's no doubt. And right now, as a team in the SEC West, you have to play. And if you're Auburn, it's borderline four, but minimum you have to play three national championships to win a national championship, because when you play Georgia in the SEC championship, that's the best team you're going to play regardless.
Yeah, and in the past, when Kirby was there with them, you had two guys that were crazy recruiters that were getting it all done, and it was easy. You had all the best players, so it's hard to lose. You know, now it's like, you know, with NIL making it even more difficult. You know, Alabama can't just sit there and stockpile five-star guys, because they're sitting there going, hey, you know, okay, you gave the quarterback $1 million. Hey, I want some money. And there ain't enough money to give everybody $1 million or $500,000. I mean, so how many five-star guys want to sit there and ride on the bench waiting their turn, you know, knowing that, hey, I'm not even getting paid here. I can go to, you know, right down the street and get another gig making really good money and be a starter.
Yeah.
It's a lot harder. And so, is the longer that he's there, does that taint his legacy? Because then I start to think, if Kirby wins another one in a row or a couple more, it looks like, well, maybe Alabama won because Kirby Smart was there.
Dan, I mean, I don't think anybody is going to not say that Nick Saban is the greatest coach of all time, even if he stays there and Kirby wins one or two more. I mean, Kirby would have to keep winning national championships consistently, which he very well might. But Nick Saban, at two different schools, has won 7 national championships. I mean, that's insane. He's won the conference 10 times. He's won the division 15 times. He won the MAC once, actually. Fun fact. I mean, he has been as dominant of a head coach. And this is a conversation that I have with somebody in regards to a previous coaching staff at an SEC school that was worried about maybe bringing certain coaches into roles and having their success as a staff be attributed to some of the coaches they brought in. In 20 years, nobody's going to care who the defensive coordinator was in the Saban dynasty. I mean, I think that they will credit Kirby Smart, absolutely, but it's the man at the helm. It's the man steering the ship that gets the credit. And you're going to look at this, and Nick Saban's won 7 national championships. You can't deny that. He's the best college football coach of all time. And, I mean, I don't know any way around that until Kirby Smart wins 8.
Okay. No, I can follow that line of thought.
Yep.
But I will say this. The only reason that Nick's there is because he's hoping to win one more.
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt. And he'll do that until he – I've always said Saban will not quit coaching until he falls over dead on the sidelines. I believe that.
And I 100% agree with you with your take about – them not being able to stockpile talent, and stories like Drew Sanders at linebacker, who transferred to Arkansas, is now going to be a first-round draft pick.
Yeah.
The more that happens, the more I think it's going to weaken their argument to just stockpile 5 stars.
Dan, we appreciate the call. If you want to keep talking, we'd love to hear from you again. Give us a call, 334-321-1390. We'll talk some college basketball when we come back.
You are on the line with Jacob Goetz and Carter Bird on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Jacob Goetz and Carter Bird with you on ESPN 106.7. Sort of switching from the Nick Saban dynasty ending at Alabama conversation into a little bit of college basketball. Obviously, Auburn does not play until tomorrow. We've talked about the significance of what the Auburn-Georgia game is tomorrow for the Tigers at home. Carter, you have put that on a must-win game for the Tigers tomorrow inside of Neville Arena. I'm kind of there with you, man. I think tomorrow is a very, very big game for Auburn. We'll get into that coming up in a little bit and more tomorrow as well. But there were some big college basketball results last night. There's some big matchups around the SEC tonight that will impact Auburn because a lot of teams that they've got coming up. And last night, not a ton going on. Obviously, SEC did not play last night. They play Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Saturdays. But last night in college basketball as a whole, number 6 Virginia escapes Syracuse 67-62, and Texas takes down Baylor 76-71, and Texas Tech, of all teams, takes down Iowa State 80-77.
Yeah, I tell you what, watching this in the Big 12 this year, it's been very, very fascinating seeing some of these games play out week to week. I've been really impressed with what Texas has done, how they've been able to put up, kind of hold things together, given the, I guess, chaos around that program in early season.
It's unbelievable. It really is.
The way that they are still sitting at 18-4 and 7-2 in conference play, I mean, you got to feel like that team has kind of been through it, and they're going to be somewhat battle-tested and ready for the tournament when it comes around because they've already dealt with so much adversity.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to think that Rodney Terry, the interim coach, has a real shot to keep that job.
Think so. I mean, he's got to be the leader for what he has done. Like you said, with everything that's happened with Texas, the fact that he's been able to hold this thing together, you get a top 15 win over Baylor. And I saw somebody on Twitter, and I don't remember who it was. They said, if I'm buying stock in any team right now over the next few years, it's Texas going to the SEC because of what they've already done and what they're becoming in college basketball. I don't know.
And this Texas Tech upset over Iowa State. Texas Tech, this is why we picked Texas Tech in the SEC Big 12 Challenge, despite them playing on the road at LSU. They've been competitive even in losses, with the exception of the first time they played Iowa State at Iowa State, if you happen to see that score.
Yeah, 84-50.
With the exception of that, they've been competitive in basically every single game. That and the West Virginia game, which you can chalk up as just a bad shooting night, it looks like. But the fact that they're able to get that win tells you, just shows you the depth in the Big 12.
First conference win for the Red Raiders last night as well. They're now 1-8.
Two-game winning streak. Hey, now.
That's right. That's right. We'll take a sidestep from this. We'll get to the phone lines again. We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. Ed, you're on the line. Welcome in.
Hey, guys. Yeah, I was just going to call. She said y'all talk about college basketball. Mm-hmm. You know, I tell you, the talent and everything that's going on at Alabama, they've got the talent and everything, and, you know. But what some people don't realize, it takes a lot of luck to get to the Final Four.
No doubt.
The ball's got to bounce your way, and you've got to, you know. And hey, they might win the Nationals, but it takes a lot of luck. Well, we know from, look at Auburn, you know, a couple years ago, you know, a missed call, you know, double dribble, or we probably would have had a national championship. Everybody knows.
And like Carter has brought up, Auburn was 1-3 a ball away in the very first round against New Mexico State from going home early in that tournament.
I mean, you can make a serious argument New Mexico State outplayed Auburn in that game.
Absolutely, and that's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. When you get to the tournament, you know, it's not all set in stone. But I do think Katie Johnson, I'm just going to ask this. Early in the year when something happened, you know, and he was held out of a game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he has not been the same. It leads someone, without someone explaining it, it leads to think that there was some type of, you know, personal issue with him, and probably him and one of the players is what I would think, you know. Mm-hmm. And he just hadn't been the same. As far as Wendell, you know, Wendell, you know, taking shots, if I'm in the huddle, every huddle, and Bruce Pearl is begging somebody to take shots, and nobody will take a shot. Well, I'm gonna take me my shot. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, look, you're playing college, you're playing Division I SEC college basketball, and if you're on the floor, you cannot be afraid to play. You cannot be afraid to shoot. You can't be afraid to step in front of somebody. I'm with you, Ed. Somebody's got to do it.
Yeah, and it just seems like there's a mentality there that, you know, I don't know. It's like a team of Ben Simmonses. You know, go out there and have fun and shoot the ball. You know, score. Have fun even if you get beat. By God, shoot the ball, you know.
Give yourself a chance, right, Ed?
Just have fun. Yeah, hey, you can't win if you don't compete.
You're right about that. Yeah, it has been a little weird seeing this team play, and especially with Bruce Pearl teams in the past who do have so much fight and so much heart, right? And I'm not saying this team doesn't, but there are times, Ed, where they don't fully show it.
It's very different. It's very different, and it may not have anything to do with KD. I just noticed that since that happened, in, you know, early in the year, that the team's been different. KD has definitely been different.
Mm-hmm. But I think you're seeing a little bit of KD thrived in non-conference play against lesser competition. When we've seen him against high-major teams, it has not been very pretty. I mean, he's...
Well, last year he did fairly well, though, didn't he?
He did.
He was better last year.
And then you saw him taper off at the end of the year. Yeah. And so that's what I'm worried about, is that you've got another situation like that.
Well,
and
I'm
so,
not trying to make him out to be, you know, a god or anything. It just seems like there's something mental that's going on with the team. And I'm like everybody else, probably like y'all, just trying to figure it out.
So by my math, and I may be a little bit off here, but I tried to do the math very quickly there. Against high major teams, so your Power Six conferences, including, and I'm including Memphis in the American, which I guess in basketball, the Big East would be your sixth conference.
Yep, don't forget about the Big East, baby.
But against your high major teams plus Memphis, which I think are your best opponents you've played all year, KD's 27 of 91 from the field, just 29.7%, which is not very good. He's been a really, really, really inefficient player.
And that's what I was saying. That's what's happened this year. But last year, I think if you look at his, like the last half of the year, just take the SEC schedule, you know, last year, I think he's fairly well.
Yeah, well, he's taken a step back.
Hang on, I can pull that up, too.
Just the eye test is kind of where you're talking about, Ed. He's definitely taken a step back. But in the numbers, he's for sure taken a step back. I would put money on it.
In just conference play last year to this year, last year he was 41.4% from the field and 29.7% from three, 72.5% at the free throw line. This year he's 28% from the field. He is 21.1% from three and 58.3% at the free throw line. And he is scoring 7.5 fewer points per game in SEC play. Really, every stat has gone down for him, actually.
I'm not trying to put anything on him. It just seems, he's in a funk and it just seems kind of like the whole team's kind of like in a, not overuse the word, but just kind of in a quagmire to where they really don't know exactly what they want to do. But I've got all the faith in the world that Bruce Pearl's going to give them the very best chance,
That's the good thing is you do have a great coach who has been here before, and Bruce Pearl does give you a chance to win every game.
I really think that Bruce is going to look at, perhaps a taller guard and perhaps, hopefully, guys that love to shoot the three, But anyway, guys, we thought we had two coming in here, I'm not going to name names, but we thought we had two that was going to be throwing them up, but they it doesn't always happen like you think,
That's right. It doesn't always happen immediately, and sometimes it doesn't happen at all. That's how it goes.
Yeah. All right, guys. Wargle.
Appreciate the call. That is Ed joining us. We always appreciate hearing from you. We'd love to hear from anybody else as well, 334-321-1390. And one more thing to add to that, it could just be the group of guys on the team. And I'm not saying anybody in particular. I'm not saying it's a bad group of guys. I don't know I'm like that. But sometimes, right, things happen behind the scenes. Things happen when losses come about. You just don't fully know how guys are going to react with losses and things going on with the team. And there just may be something off with the group mentality and with the group chemistry or something. I don't know that's what Ed is talking about, and I think there is some legitimacy to it, because like I told him, this is a different looking team. It's a different looking team shooting, offensively, defensively, effort at times, and emotionally at times, right? All of those things, it just looks a little bit different than what we've seen from Bruce Pearl basketball teams. And there's a lot that could be said about that. There's a lot that could be speculated about that as well. But there's no doubt that it is a little bit off compared to what we've seen in the past. And whether that's a lack of leadership on the team, lack of leadership in coaching, maybe it's just a lack of skill or lack of mental toughness. Not saying that you could speculate on 1,000 different things, but I think we can all agree with Ed that, it does look a little bit different this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's been my concern. I brought it up yesterday about this team. I don't know the mental makeup of this team in the locker room. I don't know if this is a very mentally tough team. And that worries me, because I'm not sure the guys that you would expect to lead the way in that locker room, I'm not sure that happens as much as we think. And I just worry about how this team could respond. If you don't win tomorrow, I'm very concerned about losing six straight games. And if you lose six straight games, I don't know where this team would be at mentally. And I don't love some of the moments, the way Auburn has responded on the court. I think they've gotten flustered. They've not handled adversity well in spurts. In some spurts, you've seen them handle it extremely well. But I don't love the lack of consistency in that. You have some guys who I think can get frustrated and lose control of what they do well,
mm-hmm.
and then you see it rear its ugly head. Things get inefficient. Turnovers start happening. They get kind of away from their game.
And I think that's the big thing is the consistency. Yes, we're talking consistency with their level of offensive and defensive performance, right? But even the consistency in the level of fight and the control of the emotions and the engagement in the game, I think all of that is extremely inconsistent as well. And you know what the biggest shower of that is, Carter? It's two straight games where you give up 45 points in the first half, and then you come out and play 10 times better in the second half than you did in the first half.
I think you do that against West Virginia, yes. I think you played better defensively in the second half against A&M, but there was still just it wasn't as crisp on offense. I think you let the fact that you were down 15, you let that get to you a little bit. You let the kind of the air being let out of the arena affect you, and I think your offensive possessions, you look like you were pressing, you were forcing things, trying to make stuff happen, trying to climb back in the game, rather than having quality possessions and using that and your defense to climb back in the game.
And unfortunately, we're questioning these things because they have not proven us wrong in these things. And that's why we talk about it. That's why Ed called in and talked about it. I'm sure a lot of other Auburn fans feel the same way, because this team has yet to prove they have those capabilities consistently night in, night out for 40 straight minutes. They just haven't shown that yet. Tomorrow's a great opportunity to do that. When you play at home against Georgia, a team that you lost to already, you've got to get the win to go even with them on the season. And you have to get this win before you hit the gauntlet of your February SEC schedule. So I'm with you. I know we're getting into some of tomorrow's conversation, and we'll talk some more about it tomorrow. But tomorrow is a big, big game. It's a must win. It's a must win for Auburn, mentally, physically, on the record book, on the resume, in bracketology.
When you look at what is coming around the corner, Auburn has to win tomorrow.
Because if you can't defend home floor against Georgia tomorrow, you have no hope for February. And yeah. I think if you lose tomorrow, the wheels could pop off, this thing could derail, and it's going to be an ugly February if that doesn't happen. So things got to change. Tomorrow is a great opportunity. It's now or never for Auburn, I think, tomorrow against Georgia. We got to get to our final break here in hour number one. We'd love to hear from you, 334-321-1390. We'll look around the country in college basketball tonight. A couple of big SEC matchups that we'll preview coming up as we wrap up hour number one.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com, or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Jacob Goetz, Carter Bird, talking all things college basketball. Had a good little conversation about Auburn and what tomorrow means for this team as they host Georgia. But tonight, there's some interesting matchups around the SEC, around college basketball in general, as things get going underway. 5:30 on the SEC Network. Bulldogs of Mississippi State going on the road to what is almost a gimme W at South Carolina, it seems like nowadays. They'll probably lose because I said that, but State on the road at South Carolina, favored by 9.5 on the road in the SEC. That shows how bad South Carolina's been at home.
Look, State's a good team. State is a good team. We just don't know it yet because of how brutal that schedule has been.
They're 1-7 in conference play. They have, 10 games left? What do they end up?
Well, let me look at the schedule. They're just coming off an upset over TCU.
Number 11 in the country,
by the way. So that should give you a little bit of an idea.
Because I agree with you. I think State's a sneaky good team. They just went through what Auburn's about to go through. State just went through. I see 1, 2, 3, 4.
I think they finish 7-9 in conference play. I think they get rolling here.
What'd you say they go?
I think they go 7-11 in conference play.
I've got him getting. I got him getting 8 wins. I've got him going 9. I have 9. 9 wins.
I have him getting 8 in their last 10. South Carolina, Missouri at home, LSU.
I've got him on the road at Arkansas.
I kind of do too.
I have him on the road at Arkansas.
I kind of do too.
Kentucky's a toss up. I'm going to say no.
Ole Miss on the road.
Yep.
Missouri on the road would be interesting.
A&M, I'm not comfortable with. They are at home, though.
South Carolina at home, they'll get that. Vanderbilt is a good team at home.
Yes.
I don't know if they pull that one off.
But they're going to have a heck of a turnaround.
My question marks are at Missouri and at Vanderbilt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and A&M. I have a.
Well, I don't think they're going to win that game at home.
You don't? Okay.
Actually, you know what? No. That Tolu Smith matchup down low.
That's going to be an awesome game.
Team that physically, I think, might be able to hang in there. They might pull that off.
And here's the thing: if you get hot, right? You get hot in the weaker back end of your conference schedule. If you're Mississippi State, you have a big winning streak or a big, 7 out of your last 8, something like that, and you get into the SEC tournament and you go to Nashville and you make a nice little run.
If you make an A&M run.
Yeah.
An A&M run.
They could back their way in.
Very, very fun conversation.
They could back their way into the NCAA tournament. Wouldn't that be something? I think they went on the road easily tonight. You look around college basketball. Some interesting ones again in the SEC. A&M on the road at Arkansas. This one could be really, really good because A&M on the way up, Arkansas on the way down. Arkansas favored by 3.5 at home.
I think this one, to me, is a matter of what happened this weekend. We saw A&M get a win in a conference game, against Vanderbilt, I believe.
Yes.
And you saw Arkansas. I think if Arkansas had beaten Baylor, I would feel so much better about Arkansas in this game. I just don't know where this Arkansas team is at. I think they put up a great fight against a ranked team in Baylor. But their only wins in conference play are against 2 of the bottom 3 teams in the league. In a broken LSU team and Ole Miss, who is awful.
I agree. I think it could be a really, really exciting game. One outside of the SEC and the Big 12. This one's on ESPN Plus, which is they've started doing this in these Big 12 games, and it should be illegal. Number 7, Kansas State on the road. Number 8, Kansas, Allen Fieldhouse. Jayhawks favored. You're going to lose yourself on this one. Kansas favored by 8.5 over Kansas State at home. Do they know something?
I think that's right. I think that's
really?
Right, because I saw
Kansas gets a win coming off of 3 straight losses.
Did you watch
coming into this
that
game?
Also, why is that game on ESPN Plus?
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying, man. It's ridiculous. It should be illegal.
It's the 7 versus 8. Why is that game on ESPN Plus?
I agree.
So Kansas State at home had to have a heck of a run to beat Kansas 83-82. I think Allen Fieldhouse is going to be rocking. And I think this Kansas State team, while very, very, very good, has not been the most impressive over the last week and a half to me since that Kansas game.
Mm-hmm.
I think Texas Tech could have beaten them if, based on shot quality, should have beaten them. They got beat by Iowa State. Florida hung in there a little bit. I thought they could have done better putting Florida away.
I like Kansas in the game. I just think being favored by 8.5 in a top 10 matchup in your conference is really, really big. We'll talk more college basketball, a little college football as well. Hour number 1 in the book. Stay tuned. Hour number 2 coming up.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7. Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goetz and Carter Bird.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika, sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. The final day of January, Tuesday, January 31st, 2018. and 23. Hope you're all doing well on this cloudy, gloomy Tuesday afternoon. Hour number one officially in the books. You know what that means. Hour number two is underway here on ESPN 106.7. Jacob Goins joined by Carter Bird here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. If you missed any of hour number one, be sure to go and catch up with the podcast. You can find it at ESPNAU.com. Click on the podcast center and you'll find a commercial free right after the show, or just search On the Line wherever you get your podcast. Talked about some news out of Tuscaloosa as a couple of coordinators have turned down Nick Saban in his coordinating position. So interesting conversation there.
Can we talk about the one of the rumored front runners for defensive coordinator there?
We can. Yeah.
Do you know who it is? And it just makes me laugh because I just don't see this going well.
Don't think I've seen it. I don't think so. But hold on. Hold on. We also talked college basketball in hour number one. Had a couple of good calls as well. We got into some Auburn basketball conversation and the just how big tomorrow is for Auburn against Georgia. We'll talk some more about it here in hour two. Talk more about it tomorrow as well. But if you missed any of the first hour, be sure to go back and catch up with the podcast. Again, you can find it at ESPNAU.com. Click on the podcast center, commercial free, right after the show. Phone lines are open all of hour number two. We'd love to hear from you. Anything on your mind in the sports world, give us a call. Comments, questions, concerns. 334-321-1390. That number again is 334-321-1390. Okay, you can go now.
So there is a guy being mentioned for the Alabama defensive coordinator position.
I don't guess I've seen it because I don't know where you're going with this.
I think it would be very, very, very funny considering how the defense didn't go well in his last stop. And it feels like more times than not, fan bases that had him as defensive coordinator or had him as a coach end up not liking him. And that is Alabama analyst Todd Grantham.
Really? I have not seen that.
Todd Grantham is one of the favorites for the Alabama defensive coordinator position. Jeremy Pruitt's a name too, but I think that there is
a lot of
red tape that they would have to go to, and it would be a laborious process for them that I don't think they want to go through right now. So I think they have moved on, and it sounds like Todd Grantham could be the guy, which is hilarious to me. Because I just don't. Here's the Saturday down south. Todd Grantham reportedly a viable candidate for Alabama DC role if top options fall through, which I'm not sure very many defensive coordinators want to go coach under Nick Saban right now.
Yeah, and according to some people that Jeremy, like you said, Jeremy Pruitt has been a pretty popular name to show up. I just don't think they go that route. I really, really don't. I have that feeling where I don't think they go Jeremy Pruitt. They very well might, right? I mean, I'm not an Alabama insider, so they very well might go that way. I just don't think that's where they go. But I had not heard the Todd Grantham name pop up. That is really, really interesting. I don't know how Alabama fans would feel about that.
Yeah, and I think that those, you look at the end of his tenure at Florida with Dan Mullen, those defenses did not exactly inspire a lot of confidence.
He's taking his trip around the SEC, that's for sure.
Yeah, and so I think you look at, I don't think they're very tough either in those seasons. I think they struggled to, they were allowing 163.9 rushing yards per game in 2021. And that was the end of the Dan Mullen era, when that folded on itself. The year before, when they had all that talent, when they had Kadarius Toney, when they had Kyle Pitts, when they were lighting up scores, the defense was bad then too.
Mm-hmm.
It allowed more yards in 2020 than it did in 2021, the year that whole staff got fired. They're allowing 170 yards on the ground and 257.5 yards in the air. 428 total yards per game, which in the SEC is not very good.
No, I mean, that's not going to get it done in the SEC. There's a reason that he's, again, taking his trip around the conference.
His 18 and 19 defenses were very solid, and he hitched a ride with Dan Mullen from Mississippi State I believe he was with Mullen in 17. Was Mullen only there from 18 to 20? To 20?
I would see, when you said 21? When you 21? Said Dan Mullen at Mississippi State, that really just like sparked a I don't know what I'm trying to say here, but like Dan Mullen at Mississippi State just seems like a blur to me. Like that, it, because it just wasn't, I don't know. Like, it, I don't know. It just seems weird to think about Dan Mullen in State. It just seems like it was there and then it wasn't, and it doesn't get talked about a whole lot. And I think the late, great Mike Leach overshadowing a lot of that because of his big personality and how good he was and how big of a name he was taking a job there at Mississippi State probably had something to do with that. But, no, that's interesting about Grantham
credit,
at Alabama.
Credit where credit's due. The defenses that he had in the first 2 years at Florida and that 1 year at Mississippi State, they're really good. And then he was at Georgia and Louisville before that. He's been around the conference a lot, went to Virginia Tech, has been around college football a lot, briefly had a stint in the NFL with the Colts and the Texans for about 5-6 years. But I just am not sure what you're going to get out of him at this point in his career.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't know. And again, if there happen to be Alabama fans listening, we'd love to hear your thoughts on that name circling around the defensive coordinator job, 334-321-1390.
It doesn't inspire a lot of excitement if I were an Alabama fan.
And it doesn't really generate a whole lot of fear from the Auburn side, I don't think.
Yeah.
Or the SEC. I mean, if Alabama were to go that way, you'd say, oh, okay. I mean, you know the guy, you know the name, you know what he does, but I would not sit here if the news broke right now that Todd Grantham was hired as Alabama's DC. I wouldn't be like, oh man, that's a heck of a hire. Like that could be great. No, I'm not going to have that reaction. Doesn't mean it can't be good, but I would not have that reaction.
His tenure, I guess, the two head coaches he worked under before Nick Saban were Dan Mullen and Bobby Petrino.
Yeesh.
Those are two very interesting cats, to say the least.
Yeah, and then you take that step up into Nick Saban, so very, very interesting. But no, I had not seen that. That's an interesting conversation. You look at sort of what's going on around college football. The Senior Bowl is practicing and coming up soon, and of course, Auburn is represented a couple of times down at the Reese's Senior Bowl. You've got Derek Hall. Obviously, he is down there, and Eckler Yoda is also down there as well for Auburn, and I think the biggest storyline outside, we'll talk about those two gentlemen in just a second, but I think the biggest storyline coming out of the Senior Bowl is an individual that is not at the Senior Bowl. And it was a conversation we had, what, a week ago, right, about a guy that decided not to go and play in the Senior Bowl who just won back-to-back national championships. I'm not making a big story out of it, but I do think it's worth mentioning about Stetson Bennett and what happened to him over the weekend in Texas.
Yeah, awful look. Awful look that's going to hurt an already fragile draft stock because of his size and maybe the lack of pro elite traits that he has. I don't think it was a good look when Trey told us last week that when Trey Wallace told us that he was not going to be a part of the Senior Bowl. And he speculated that he didn't want his measurements out there. And I personally think that that's really dumb. And when you don't go to the Senior Bowl, and as that news breaks, the next following weekend, you get arrested in Dallas at 6 a.m. for public intoxication, it's a really bad look.
Yeah, and look, you never want to see it for anybody. And again, we were shocked when Trey, because that story broke last week when we had Trey Wallace here on the program. That story broke from Trey Wallace that Stetson Bennett would not be participating in the Senior Bowl. And you and I were genuinely shocked. Like, we were genuinely shocked because of the everything around Stetson Bennett, where, in my opinion, and I think you agree, Carter, he needs all the help he can get to get to the NFL. He's a good player, and credit to him, he'll go down as one of the best Georgia players to ever wear the Georgia logo. But when it comes to his NFL potential, it's not extremely high. And the Senior Bowl can help you get more exposure. Scouts from every NFL team go to the Senior Bowl. Like, it really just baffled us that he decided not to attend and not to play. And then, yeah, just like you said, the following weekend, you get arrested in Texas for being intoxicated in out in public at 6 o'clock in the morning. So not a great look for Stetson Bennett. Hope he bounces back. Hope he's able to make up for it. But I think that was worth noting that it did happen. And I think it is a huge storyline of somebody that decided not to go to the Senior Bowl.
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, I think that my initial thought when Trey told us that was maybe Stetson and his camp were concerned about not being surrounded by NFL-caliber offensive linemen, by stud tight ends, by good running backs, high-talented receivers, and being in a system that made him look very, very good at the Senior Bowl. Might they be concerned that it would expose him for not being what he was thought to be? That was my first thought, and then when Trey went with the measurements angle, that
which was his speculation. And,
I don't understand that. If that's the speculation that people are having, I don't understand that from Stetson's perspective.
Oh, I'm with you.
But you also have to wonder. I mean, if he was prepping for the Senior Bowl, you have to imagine this weekend goes different, right?
Oh yeah, there's no doubt. You would hope. Right. So, and again, I mean, look, I hope he bounces back and I hope he can kind of just move on from it. You don't ever want to see this happen, but it's a huge storyline coming out of a back-to-back national champion, somebody who turned down the Senior Bowl this week and is trying to get into the NFL. As far as we know, right? As far as we know, he's trying to get to the pros. So we'll see how that goes. But to talk about and highlight the two guys from Auburn that are at the Senior Bowl, you have Derek Hall and Eckler Leota, two representatives, two very good representatives of Auburn at the Senior Bowl. Good to see them again representing Auburn down there. They get a chance to show off their talents a little bit. And like I said, scouts from all over the country in the NFL go to the Senior Bowl because of all of the guys that are there. There's a lot of dudes down there playing in the Senior Bowl right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're going to see some people emerge, obviously, because they're going to have a big week. I mean, you look at these type of environments where you're going best on best and you kind of eliminate complexity of scheme, and it's really about who has the physical tools to be great. You look at it at the high school level and the effect that that gets. You look at what Keldrick Faulk did at the All-American Bowl, and now he's a five-star on Rivals. I mean, he jumped 60 spots in the rankings. I mean, those are the type of things where it's a great place for somebody to showcase their skill set, and I am excited to keep an eye on it. I don't necessarily like... I find the high school bowl games more interesting than Senior Bowl, to be honest.
Yeah, that's fair.
Combine's a little bit more interesting than Senior Bowl to me.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, no doubt. I think the Combine is huge, but I still think it's important to at least note that Auburn had a couple of representatives down there.
Breaking news.
Okay.
The Saints and Broncos are finalizing compensation in return for Super Bowl winning head coach Sean Payton, sources tell ESPN.
Wow.
This clears the way for Payton to sign with the Broncos to become Denver's next head coach.
Wow.
And so Payton is expected to head to Denver as its next head coach from Adam Schefter of ESPN.
Wow. Literally, as soon as you said that, it popped up. Looky there. That is interesting. This first segment is going to be like the old days making headlines. We're hitting all the points in this segment. But how big is that?
That is enough of a headline and like a shockwave in the NFL world that I feel like we needed to change.
I'm 100% with you. That's huge. And this has been in the works for a long time for Sean Payton to get off of Fox, which... he's been with Fox for a few years now, right?
1 year. And
it's just the one year? Okay.
He retired
just the 1 year.
Because remember.
Well, he had all the stuff.
When Brady retired and Sean Payton retired, the alleged inner workings there was that they both were going to become minority owners of the Miami Dolphins.
Mm-hmm.
And Payton was going to become the head coach of the Dolphins. And Tom Brady was going to be the starting quarterback. Then Brian Flores blew that up with his lawsuit against the Dolphins for being
right.
paid to lose games.
Yes, that's right. Wow, I forgot about all that.
Yeah.
Wow, I forgot about all that.
Think about how different the NFL would be if it was Tom Brady throwing passes to Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle this past year. And, I mean, would the Dolphins be playing in the Super Bowl?
they would have been competing for it. There's no doubt about it.
Instead, at the end of the year, Skylar Thompson started a playoff game.
Oh, man. I forgot about all that went down. That's so crazy. I'm so glad you said that.
With Sean Payton as head coach, I think we could seriously be discussing a Miami Dolphins Super Bowl appearance right now.
It very well could be possible. There's no doubt. Well, that is huge news. If you're an NFL fan, if you follow the NFL at all, Sean Payton will now become the Denver Broncos' next head coach, because we know since Peyton Manning has left, the Broncos have just been on a downward spiral and just don't really know what's happening in Denver. This is the guy to fix it. Look, he's a really, really good coach, man. He is a really, really good coach.
Yes, he's an unbelievable head coach, but what I am curious about is, can Sean Payton get old Russell Wilson out of Russell Wilson?
No. I think Russell Wilson is what he is.
What do you do with him?
Find somebody desperate enough to take him. Houston.
Nobody's that desperate to take on that contract right now.
No, not the contract. The contract was stupid. But I mean, you either try to get what you can out of him, or you just say, sorry, Charlie, and put him on the bench and play whoever the backup is. I don't even remember who it is in Denver right now.
I think you have to draft.
I was about to say, you got to draft somebody. But can you afford to draft a quarterback and pay him right now?
He's 1 year into a five-year, $242.6 million contract.
That's so bad. It's so bad. And look, it's hindsight's 2020, right? It's easy to say that after what Russell Wilson had the worst year of his career, but he was not worth that money before this past year. He was good, but he was not worth that much money. I promise. He was not.
His cap hit this next year is actually only $22 million. Then it goes up to $35 million, then $55 million in 2025.
His agent did some work on that contract. He's making some money. I don't know who his agent is.
And then it goes up to $58 million in 26.
Holy smokes, man. Wow. That's unbelievable. The fact that they're paying Russell Wilson, and now they have Sean Payton coming in. Maybe he's the saving grace for Russell Wilson and the Denver Broncos. That was some good breaking news. I like that, as we got into a little bit of everything here in that first segment. We'd love to hear from you, your thoughts on pretty much anything, because that's kind of where we are right now. 334-321-1390. I want to address something that you actually just sent me a few moments ago about the Atlanta Braves, Carter. It's actually getting a little interesting. We'll talk about that when we come back. Again, we'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. We'll talk some Atlanta Braves. Braves baseball when we come back here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Back inside the studio at ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, talking a little Atlanta Braves baseball as the season is closer than you think, I promise. Something that I had seen earlier today, Carter, you actually sent it to me earlier in the show. It's something that is very interesting, and if it continues to come out as true, then very, very interesting to see. But Tom Hart, we all know him from SEC Network, ESPN, all of his work and announcing and everything that he does. He is extremely good at what he does. But Tom Hart is being reported from Awful Announcing as a top finalist for the new Braves play-by-play job. I think that's really, really interesting.
Yeah, how about that?
I really, really like Tom Hart, by the way.
I think
he is a stand-up dude. From what I've seen on the air and what I've heard, he is fantastic.
I do, too. I just find it so fascinating from the perspective of... I can't recall, like, in my mind, Tom Hart calling baseball a lot.
And
I'm sure he's done it with the SEC Network with the amount of stuff that he does with them.
And that was from Awful Announcing's website. It's according to MLB.com's Mark Bowman. Tom Hart of ESPN and SEC Network is a top finalist for the position, talking about the Braves play-by-play announcer. Obviously, the opening is there.
One of two or three finalists, according to David O'Brien. Interesting. I'd be really fascinated to see what that would look like. But like, when I think of Tom Hart, I think SEC football, or I think ESPN, college football, SEC football, and SEC basketball. I don't know. Maybe he's done baseball and I'm just not processing it.
I don't think that's his.
I've not thought about him in baseball at all.
I don't think that's his dominant work. I mean, like you said, you think about SEC football and basketball. Like, you just, again, I'm sure he has, but I don't remember hearing a lot of him in baseball, whether he's done, and again, I'm kind of there with you. Like, I don't think of him as baseball. I think of football and basketball, where he's great. He is fantastic in any role that he plays. But I thought that was an interesting storyline. Tom Hart is one of the finalists.
If you look at his career timeline from 1999 to, it appears, 2011, he did some sort of baseball. He was with the Winston-Salem Warthogs and the Tennessee Smokies from 99 to 06.
Okay.
So he's doing baseball play-by-play for that stretch in time for minor league.
So 7 years.
He was the Braves Live host and field reporter from 2011 to 2014. Which
I knew
is
that.
A Braves connection there.
Yeah, I knew that.
But he's been doing, so he's been doing baseball play-by-play for the SEC Network from 14 to now. He actually did, MLB on ESPN play-by-play for the past two seasons. I did not know that.
Is that when they did? Is that when ESPN in their MLB coverage like did a whole shakeup of play-by-play guys and Tom Hart slipped in there? Is that how that worked? I'll be completely honest with you, Carter.
Of me, I do not think of a single moment where I recognize him doing an MLB game on ESPN.
Well, I'll be honest with you, it's extremely rare for me to sit down and watch a baseball game on TV. If I'm gonna take in a baseball game,
I'll watch the Braves on Bally Sports.
Yes, which, I will do that.
Isn't it interesting that that appears to be folding and costing everybody money?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
But if I'm not going to go to the baseball game and I'm going to take it in at home in some way, I'm going to listen to the radio. I mean, look, we're radio guys. I listen to baseball on the radio more than anything. I'll sit down and watch it sometimes if the Braves are on or if the Red Sox are on. Obviously, that's my go-to. But more times than not, I listen to it on the radio. So, look, if they do go in the direction of Tom Hart, I think that's a good hire. I'm interested to see how that goes. He's just a finalist. They're not saying he's being reported as who they are hiring, but Tom Hart is a finalist for the play-by-play role for the Atlanta Braves. So I thought that was interesting as well going on today.
Yeah,
but
fascinating.
Yeah, all kinds of stuff going on today, man. That's crazy. All kinds of stuff going on today. I want to look at a couple of the games again in basketball coming up tonight, because in just a few minutes, we're going to look at bracketology. We're going to look at where Auburn stands, how Auburn can improve their ranking in bracketology, where they could end up in bracketology with the upcoming month of February. All that coming up in just a few minutes. But earlier, we were talking about some of the matchups tonight in college basketball, and we sort of left off on number 7 Kansas State on the road at number 8 Kansas. The Jayhawks favored by 8.5 at home in Allen Fieldhouse. And Carter, you said you like the spread. You like the Jayhawks big tonight.
I kind of do. It feels like a revenge game. It feels like that Kansas atmosphere in Allen Fieldhouse will be electric. I think with what you saw Kansas do, with what you saw in that first matchup, I think Kansas can get that one done in the rematch. I'm trying to go back and look at the first one. If I do recall,
83-82 loss for Kansas. It was a win for the Kansas State Wildcats.
But you got a special, special, special performance out of Jalen Wilson.
Yes.
And I would have thought that would have been the most impressive game of that week, but I think either the next night or the same night was when Shiwe went for 37-24.
Yeah, well, hey, we've been talking about how Auburn is about to go through their tough stretch and how big of a game tomorrow is for Auburn against Georgia. We talked about how that game for Kansas was on Saturday on the road at Rupp taking on Kentucky, coming off three straight losses, right? You beat Iowa State, number 14 Iowa State, then you lost to number 13 Kansas State, number 14 TCU, and number 17 Baylor. You go on the road to play Kentucky in the SEC Big 12 Challenge, and we talked about if you lose that game, if you're Kansas, then you have to come home and play number 7 Kansas State, then on the road at number 13 Iowa State, home for number 10 Texas. Like, that's a brutal schedule.
Yeah.
It's ending January, coming into February for Kansas in their Big 12 schedule, right? They go on the road and get a big win against against Kentucky. Now they come on, they come back home. They're going to take on Kansas State. I like the Jayhawks. I think they win tonight, and I think that I think they'll win tonight. I really do. I just think 8.5 is a lot of points.
When I look at the Big 12, I just think it's so very difficult to win on the road against Big 12 teams. If you look this past weekend, I mean, I'm pretty sure every Big 12 team that played at home won. Yeah, every Big 12 team that played at home in the SEC Big 12 Challenge won. And same thing happened on Monday when they got back to Big 12 play. Like, it's just hard to win on the road in the Big 12.
Yo, it is, no doubt. It's the best conference of college basketball for a reason. We'll talk some bracketology, see where Auburn is right now, according to Joe Lunardi. How can they improve, or maybe they'll drop in bracketology? We'll talk about it coming up here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goetz and Carter Bird on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Jacob Goins and Carter Bird here on ESPN 106.7. Before we get into bracketology, talk about some timely information we've covered on this show today. We talked in the first hour about D'Amico Ryans, possibly. You said you were scared for him to become...
If he did not get the Texans job, I would have been very concerned.
Yes, you talked about him and how you would be worried if he were to be the successor at Alabama when Nick Saban is finally done, whatever that'll be. Well, he just got hired by the Texans on a 6-year deal. So you can take a little sigh of relief over there, buddy.
Absolutely. I think that is huge.
Isn't that funny, though?
That is huge. And now, what? Alabama's going to go all in on Dan Lanning when that time comes?
Yeah, that could be the move. Definitely, I don't know. I just think it's very interesting that, D'Amico Ryans and Texans reach a 6-year deal.
This feels like, if you look at Adam Schefter's Twitter, which is popping off right now. So D'Amico Ryans, he breaks the story that he is hired as the head coach for the Texans 10 minutes ago. 3 minutes ago, the 49ers have requested to interview Chris Harris for their defensive coordinator spot, and he's currently with the Titans as their passing game coordinator following his stint as the Commanders DBs coach. So it feels like the Texans and 49ers working together to be like, hey, give us some time. You know you're going to hire him, and as soon as you hire it, we can have our plan in motion for defense coordinator.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like, huh? Mm-hmm. That's what it sounds like. Well, I just thought that was interesting. We covered a little bit of that today, and about an hour later, D'Amico Ryans from the he gets hired to the Texans. So don't worry, he's not going to Alabama just yet over there, brother. But let's get into some bracketology a little bit, talking Auburn basketball, talking the SEC in general. We'd love to hear from you and your thoughts. If you haven't seen it yet, go take a look. We'd love to hear what you have to say about it. 334-321-1390. This was updated as of 9 a.m. this morning from Joe Lunardi. He is the ESPN bracketology guru, if you will. Purdue, your top overall seed. Interesting here, your first team out is Texas A&M. Your last team in is Oklahoma.
Yeah, and how about that? I'm curious where Oklahoma would be on the list had they lost a close game to Alabama rather than blowing them out.
And again, we talked about this a little bit on Saturday, on the bubble, some very interesting opponents that Auburn and Alabama have both seen, or one or the other, sometimes both. Here's on the bubble right now. Memphis and West Virginia are your last four byes. Last four in, Kentucky and Oklahoma. First four out, how about Texas A&M? Next four out, nobody super crazy there.
Is there a scenario where Auburn plays their way out of the tournament right now?
Very well could be. It could be, and I truly believe that. I truly believe they could. I'm not saying they will.
You cannot feel great about the matchup that he's given Auburn.
No, Auburn fans, if you have not seen it, I wouldn't be super excited about it. I would definitely be a little nervous, just based off of the other teams around you, the teams you could potentially play.
The team he has you matched up with, you lost to and got beat soundly by in USC. Yeah.
Auburn has an 8 seed right now in the South region, according to Joe Lunardi. Number 9, USC. That would be your first round matchup.
Get out of that. Congrats. You get Purdue.
The number one team in the tournament right now. The number one overall seed.
I'd be very worried about what Zach Edey could do to Auburn's big men.
Oh, my gosh. Zach Edey would go off for 30. He'd go off for 30 and 20. 30 points, 20 rebounds. Nobody else can stop him in the country. And unfortunately, what has Auburn done?
If you got through that, what, you get Duke?
You get Duke or Xavier. Or possibly a St. Louis team that you struggled to beat this year.
You beat them, though.
You did beat them.
So at least you feel better about that than you do USC.
The other teams in that bracket, St. Mary's, Pitt, Kansas State, Miami.
Kansas State is a daggum 3 seed. What are we doing? They moved up to a 3 seed.
Yeah.
What?
Respect out of the Big 12, I think. It's got to be. Has to be, right?
So how are they not higher? That's what I'm saying.
I mean, 3 seeds.
Saying, how are they not on the 2 line?
I don't know. I'm okay with them as a 3 seed.
On CBS a week ago.
Well, they were never a 1 seed on ESPN.
I know, but like, how does he have have Kansas State so much lower than everybody else?
I think a 3 seed's fine for Kansas State right now. I think that's fine for them. That's a good spot for the Wildcats. I know you have sweet spot. Three is just fine for Kansas State right now. See where they end up in the Big 12 when this season's over, and then we'll talk. But they're in that bracket.
I hope they win the Big 12 after that statement by you so badly.
That's fair. Miami's in there. UCLA is in there. That's a tough bracket for Auburn that they pulled as an 8 seed in the South region. They'd be playing up in Columbus in Ohio, playing USC. And then, like you said, if they happen to get through that, congrats. You get the number one team in the tournament. Purdue. So tough draw for Auburn so far.
The 17 teams in the South region that he has right now, he has 10 of them, or the 18 teams, he has 10 of them projected as conference tournament winners, automatic qualifiers.
Yeah,
that'd be something.
That's not a pretty draw for Auburn.
I tell you what, that Pittsburgh-Penn State matchup
would be
as
awesome.
The 11 seed.
Be awesome.
Rivalry between those two schools. That's a Pittsburgh team that's sneaky good. That'd be a lot of fun.
That's a first four.
I think that Pittsburgh team,
yeah,
with that draw with Penn State, with that draw with St. Mary's, that could be a sneaky...
And that draw with Kansas State, man.
Sneaky Sweet 16 team, potentially.
Yeah, look, that's one of those first four games in Dayton. As of right now, look... You look at this 64-68 team bracket, it's going to change tremendously over the next month and a half. I mean, there's no doubt about it, but it is interesting to look at where teams are right now and where they could be come March 15th, 16th, right in there in that mid-March range. Auburn has an 8 seed. Right, you have Alabama. If you look over across the side to the Midwest, they are the 1 seed in a bracket with North Carolina, Northwestern, your boys, Indiana, Baylor.
Northwestern would beat North Carolina today if they played.
That's fair. I think it'd be a good game. North Carolina would be favored just because of the name, but I think Northwestern would have a shot, no doubt.
Yeah, I think Northwestern would give Alabama a better fight right now than Auburn would.
I could jump on that train. Indiana in there, Baylor in there, West Virginia, Auburn, a team that Auburn just lost to, Gonzaga in there, Creighton, Arkansas, Kansas. You want to talk about a stacked side of the bracket? That is massive right there. Those are some big names in college basketball.
I don't think Arkansas is a tournament team. I just don't.
They're a 10 seed right now.
I don't think that they, when it's all said and done, I do not think Arkansas will be in the NCAA tournament.
The way they're playing right now, I don't think so. I'm with you. I don't think they will be.
They hung with Baylor, and credit to them that they almost got that win on the road, but they need a win like that for me to feel like they're going to be anything, because we've just seen them be so inconsistent in SEC play.
Looking around the SEC, Tennessee is a 1 seed out of the East in New York. They have Clemson. Shout out our boss, Steve Witten. You have number 5, UConn. You have Iowa State as a 4 seed, which is a little questionable. I think they're still a solid. We'll see how they end up. Again, the Big 12 is just such a big question mark right now.
Well, yeah. I mean, the Big 12 is super, super deep, and they're all really good. And you've seen the worst teams in the league beat some good teams. You've seen the best teams in the league. I mean, you've seen middle-tier teams. You saw them get some wins against high-level SEC teams this weekend.
Yeah, we just talked about Pitt and Penn State as a possible first four matchup in Dayton, Ohio. How about this one? Kentucky, Oklahoma. Are you serious?
That would be
awesome if that game could happen up in Dayton.
Does that mean that Kentucky was almost, they would have been out of the tournament had, or they did not beat Kansas, but they are flirting with not making this tournament.
Oh, yeah, they're flirting with it right now. They need a strong February.
Them and Dayton for a first four game would be really funny, too.
It'd be unfair. It would be absolutely unfair. Dayton Arena or UD Arena is very big. It's very wide. It goes up really high. Lots of seats in there. It would be completely blue. It would be unbelievably blue because there's a lot of Kentucky fans in Ohio. Lexington is a decent drive. There's a lot of fans in Northern Kentucky. They would make the quick drive up to Dayton, I promise you. UD Arena would be absolutely filled to the brink with blue. That would be an interesting one. Kentucky, Oklahoma. You have Virginia in there. Missouri as a 7 seed. Texas as the 2 seed. We talked about them a little bit earlier and what they've been able to do with the craziness around their program.
I think Missouri might be a sneaky potential Elite Eight team in that draw.
Elite Eight, really?
I think they're better than Maryland.
I don't think they beat Texas, though.
I think they just showed you that they can get about anybody in that Big 12 conference with the way that they handled Iowa State. If they won that game, I don't hate any of the matchups out of the other side unless it's, what, Kentucky?
Yeah, those are tough games to call. Like, Virginia Furman, like, they're saying Furman is a 14 as an AQ, so they're going to win their conference. Virginia had to squeak by a mid-Syracuse team last night. I mean, look, Virginia is not good, okay? They're decent, but they're not good. I don't like Virginia. I don't think they're a good team. I don't think they're going to make it very far because of just the style they play. I know they've won it before. I get that. But just watch them play. They go up against a good team. It's not going to happen. But think about Providence versus the winner of Kentucky to Oklahoma. Like, some really, really tough games to call down there. And then the final part of the bracket to just sort of look at the rest of it. You've got Houston as a 1 seed, NC State and Iowa, 8-9.
Winner of that game would beat Houston in the second round. I'll put that out there, too.
Wow. Okay.
Both of those teams are really, really solid.
I like NC State a lot. I like NC State. Iowa, you watch more Iowa. Of Iowa than I do, but
Iowa can score. Iowa is a top 12 scoring team in the country in offensive efficiency.
I did not know that.
They are really good on
Interesting.
Offense.
You look at Illinois as a 5 seed, TCU as a 4 seed. You've got Rutgers. You have Memphis. Obviously, Auburn saw that team. Marquette, who is sneaky good. I like Marquette out of the Big East. You have Michigan State as a 7, Arizona as a 2. That one, that side of the bracket, not as, I guess, not as flashy as some of the other ones. But, man, I look back to that Midwest bracket. Alabama, North Carolina, Northwestern, Indiana, Baylor, West Virginia, Gonzaga, Creighton, Arkansas, Kansas. That is a heck of a bracket, man. That's who in the world comes out of that? That's tough.
Wouldn't it be really fun for the third time in 2 years to have an Alabama-Gonzaga matchup in the Elite Eight?
I think it could be really interesting, yeah. It could be. And so
I'm not convinced that this Alabama team gets that far.
Well, we had Ed call in earlier talking about how, and that's not the first time he's brought it up, and it's a good point, how, look, just because you get to the tournament, just because you are one of the top 4 teams, top 10 teams, whatever it may be, just because you have the better coach, the best players, doesn't mean you're going to win it all.
Yeah, I mean, if I was Alabama, I'd be very worried about that Baylor team in the Sweet 16.
I'd be worried about having to play North Carolina or Northwestern in the second round. Because if you don't play well, those are teams that can beat you.
Northwestern would put Chase Audige, who very well could win Defensive Player of the Year in college basketball, because he's racking up steals like crazy. He's such a good player. You could put him on Brandon Miller, and you've got the size down low with Matt Nicholson, who's 7 feet tall, 260 pounds down there. Alabama doesn't have anybody with that kind of mass. It'd be a really fun matchup. It really would be. I'm not saying Northwestern wins that game. But I think they hang with an Alabama team right now better than people would realize.
Yeah, and if you're Alabama in that side, you win your first round game, okay, you have to play North Carolina or Northwestern. You win that game, you're playing Indiana or Baylor more than likely, possibly a sneaky good Charleston team, okay. Then you're going to have to play West Virginia or Gonzaga or Creighton or Kansas, like those are all really, really good teams that can make a run to the Final Four. Like, I think Kansas, Creighton, Gonzaga, and Alabama, and Baylor, I think you're looking at 5 potential Final Four teams in that bracket. 5 out of that one side, in the one corner of the bracket.
I think that West Virginia team,
they can make
a
run.
Is a team that could make the Sweet 16.
Yeah, I don't think, I was about to say, I don't think they're a Final Four team, but I think they can make some noise.
I think they can beat San Diego State. I think that they could beat in a one-off matchup Gonzaga probably.
Yeah, if what's-his-name goes off for another 30-something points. So, yeah, you never know. What about Auburn's draw? Look, this is going to change. This is of January 31st today, and the bracket officially will not be released until middle of March. So this is going to change quite a bit. What do you think about Auburn's draw as an 8 seed?
Oh, it's awful. There are so many teams that I don't feel like Auburn matches up well against. I mean, USC right off the bat. Purdue, who would be your second-round matchup. You look down the bracket, the athleticism that Duke would bring to a game. Xavier is a well-coached team. They're a good team. We know St. Louis, the difficulty Auburn had with them earlier this year. That Pitt team is very solid. That Penn State team is very solid, too. Kansas State's playing very, very, very good ball. But in the bottom half of that bracket, UCLA, Mick Cronin, I mean, he's building something very special, I think, at UCLA. But the one that just also terrifies me is Miami. Because of last year.
Yeah, well, it would take a lot. I mean, you'd have to play them in the in the Elite Eight. But
like, there's a bunch of teams that would scare me if I were an Auburn fan right now.
I'm looking at it. Purdue, Xavier would have to start playing better, but I'll give it to him. Kansas State and UCLA. I mean, you're looking at four potential Final Four teams in Auburn's side of the bracket. So, yeah. I mean, look, as an 8 seed, can they...
It feels like college basketball is pretty deep this year. It feels like there's... You don't have this list of teams where you're like, oh, these, like... Like the year that we had Gonzaga and Baylor, where we knew that those were the best two teams from wire to wire that year.
Yep.
You don't feel like you have that this year, I don't think.
No, because I think Tennessee as a one seed could end up not being a one seed. I think Houston as a one seed could not be a one seed. I think there's some two seeds that could fall or even rise, some three seeds. I mean, yeah, I'm with you. I think college basketball this year is a lot more balanced, and that's what makes it fun. This coming March is going to be upset city. No perfect bracket will happen. I know that's a really bold prediction, but like,
there's been one ever by some kid.
No, I don't think it's ever happened.
Well, not in actual competition, but some kid did it one time.
Oh, I'm sure he did it. I'm sure he didn't just write it in. But what I'm saying is it's going to be crazy. And college basketball is a lot more balanced, and I think that's a good comparison. A couple of years ago, Gonzaga-Baylor, where we knew those two teams were going to meet up, and I knew Baylor was just unbelievable, man. That team was really, really good. Auburn as an 8 seed right now in bracketology. We'll talk about what they got to do to improve on that coming up in the next couple of weeks.
Brave of you to say that the thing that has a 1 and 9.2 quintillion chance will not happen.
What can I say? I put the JG guarantee on it.
You like to pick just heavy favorites. That's your thing right now.
That's not always true. That's not always true. And it's not always bold to pick the favorites because you didn't do it and I won. So it is what it is.
Oh, goodness.
I'm just saying it's going to be a wild march. The tournament's going to be insane. We'll talk about what Auburn can do to improve on their 8 seed as we wrap up the Tuesday edition of On the Line here on the other side.
On the Line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com, or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Wrapping up the Tuesday edition of On the Line, Jacob Goins and Carter Bird with you on ESPN 106.7. Well, if you missed any of today's show, be sure to go and catch up with the podcast. You can find it at ESPNAU.com. Click on the podcast center. You'll find a commercial free right there coming up in just a few minutes right after the show. But Carter, we left off and we got a few minutes here, so we'll try to get through this quickly. Auburn has an 8 seed in today's bracketology from Joe Lenardi. What can they do to improve on that, and what are the chances that they're lower than that or possibly in a doomsday situation find themselves at home watching March Madness?
Well, I mean, if you don't win Wednesday, if you don't win tomorrow, I think we are having a discussion about, okay, what does the future hold here? Because this stretch coming up of at Tennessee, at A&M, Alabama at home, then Missouri at home, it has a chance to go haywire. It has a chance to crater, and it has a chance to get really ugly. And if Auburn loses 6-7 games in a row, yeah, Auburn's going to be out of the tournament at that point. Auburn's going to have to play their way back into it. And I just have concerns, man. It is going to be... I'm just going to be nervous if I were an Auburn fan all day leading up to that game tomorrow night.
Yeah, and look, we've talked about how important it is for Auburn to win tomorrow, and we'll talk some more about it on tomorrow's show as well, but the fact that Auburn, coming into the month of February, with tomorrow being the first of the month, and you're an 8 seed in bracketology, you're middle of the pack, man. You're middle of the pack, and you're about to go through, I would put it up there if I have not compared all of the teams in college basketball, but you probably have a top five toughest schedule to end the season in college basketball. I'd be willing to put some money on that. You have a very, very, very tough schedule in the month of February and to end the month of March. You have the toughest three-game stretch to end the year than anybody does. I'd put a lot of money on that.
Yes.
And the fact that you're middle of the pack right now, you're coming off a two-game losing streak, and all signs point towards the ground for the final destination of this team, that's not a great feeling coming into February.
I don't think it's fair to say all signs point to the ground, but we are watching a team kind of flirt with... It's playing chicken right now with the cliff here, and things can get ugly, but if you don't handle business tomorrow night. If you handle business tomorrow night, then I think you still have some hope on Saturday.
But tomorrow's game is not just like if you win tomorrow, it's all fine and dandy, right?
Well, no. I'm saying from a momentum, confidence, in the locker room perspective, you win tomorrow, I think that there is still a scenario where Auburn could win at Tennessee. I'm not saying it's likely. I think that Texas A&M becomes much more of a reality to win that game. And then I think that you still have somewhat... some positivity, some decent vibes, if you're able to pull one of those two off when Alabama comes to town. It's a different story if you drop this game Wednesday and then lose the next two after that.
And it's all about the mentality. The mentality of the team, the coaches, the fan base. Tomorrow's a big day for Auburn basketball. We'll talk about it on the show tomorrow, 2-4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Come back and join us, but that's it. We are out of time. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.